Michael, you're in folks. QST, this is Marty, WV5Y. It's time for a pre-Christmas holiday edition of the Houston AmSat Net. And this net meets on Tuesdays to discuss topics related to satellites, balloons, and other amateur-related items. This is net number 1633. It's 8 p.m. Central Time here on Tuesday, December 23rd, 2025. Which in UTC time is Wednesday, December 24th, 2025 at 0200. And we've got a lovely 71 degrees here down here in Houston with 86% humidity. So quite lovely outside and very seasonal. Hi, hi. This is a directed net, and all calls should go through net control, and this net is dedicated to Andy McAllister, W5ACM. And thanks to Joe, W5BSA, who on the 145.19 repeater in West Houston, and also the 443.325 repeater in Katy. They both have a PL tone of 123.0, and then there's the 146.7 repeater downtown, and it's networked repeaters. And then when these connections are working, there's the AmSat DMR Ton Group 98006, YSF Fusion 11689, All-Star Node is on 572580, and the Echo Link, it's at star AmSat star. And I will now take any chickens.
Okay, Delta 5, Juliet Romeo Delta, W5 Junior Decarl. Good evening, Marty.
Good evening, Carl. WD5JRD up there in Jersey Village. Got a good loud signal this evening. We got anybody else out there?
WD5PQJ.
All right, good evening, Herbert, KD5PQJ in West Houston. Hope you guys are all set for the holidays. It's right upon us. And we do have some information here to start out with from the South Texas Balloon Launch Team. Okay, on Saturday, they launched three balloons, and one of them is W5RIN, and let's see, it's due at APRS, we had KI5ZRE-12, and also just KI5ZRE. So we got all three of those balloons up there that just launched on Saturday. And then we got an announcement from Andrew Koenig, KE5GDB. He says, good afternoon. A few of us from the Richardson area Balloonatics, that's up by Dallas, are in the Houston area for the holidays, and to distract from actual family obligations, we're going to do a quick latex balloon launch. The ultimate goal of this launch is to prove some new WeNet hardware. It's a new Pi Hat with 30 dBm radio, U-Block, Max M10, battery monitoring, and stuff like that. And this will be a hydrogen launch using a 2014-era W5ACM 1,200-kilogram K-Mont balloon. So I'm not sure if it's just a balloon that was from kind of launching back when Andy was around that they were doing then, one of the old balloons, or just the same type. But we're interested in seeing what it does. And those are generally the ones that make it to you know, above 100,000 feet.
BL-123.
He says, if you're interested in setting up a receiver, a Pi 4 or 5, and an RTL-SDR is all you need. There's some info. You got a link at github.com/K5RWK/balloonatics/tree/main/ground_station/pound/ground-station. And you can also feed upper sideband audio from the Horus trackers into the Web Horus decoder, which is at horus.sondhub.org. Okay, the launch is going to take place tomorrow. It's going to arrive at 10 a.m. at the Corbett Park in Warden, Texas, not far from the Warden Intergalactic Spaceport. And they said arrive at 10 a.m., launch at 10:30 a.m. Chase Simplex is on 146.54 megahertz. And the payloads consist of a WeNet SSPV on 431.5 megahertz and a KE WeNet. There's an RS-41 Radiothon Tracker, 432.7 megahertz, Horus Binary V2, K5RWK, and then DFM/17 radiothon/tracker on 432.8 megahertz, and it's Horus Binary 2 version 2, and its caller will be KE5GVB. Okay, you can track on Sondhub, and that's at amateur.sondhub.org/question_QE=KE5GVB,K5RWK,KE5GVB-WENET. There's going to be live images at https://ssdv.habhub.org/KE5GVB. Okay, so if you don't have any commitments or anything going on, no last minute shopping, well, if you need to get away, Warden, down by Warden there, the park for the balloon launch might be the place to go. Okay, this is Marty, WV5Y. Okay, we want to remind everybody you can call and make a quick phone check into the net by calling 713-467-9870. You can also send an APRS message to WV5Y, that's West Virginia 5 Yankee, with no dashes and no numbers, as Andy's like to say. And in the email, it's WV5Y@comcast.net. All right, we're changing gears over, going to the ANS Bulletin. And this is ANS Bulletin number 355. And let's see here. This is from Paul Stotzer. And the AMSAT News Service Bulletins are a free weekly news and information service of AMSAT, the Radio Amateur Satellite Corporation. ANS publishes news related to amateur radio in space, including reports on the activities of a worldwide group of amateur radio operators who share an active interest in designing, building, launching, and communicating to analog and digital amateur radio satellites. Okay, the news feed over on AMSAT.org publishes news of amateur radio in space as soon as our volunteers can post it. So please send any amateur satellite news or reports to ans-editor@amsat.org. And you can sign up for a free email delivery of the AMSAT News Service bulletins via the ANS list. And that way the bulletins will just show right up in your inbox. And so you can join up by just going over to mailman.amsat.org/pastorius/lists/ans.amsat.org. Okay, we're quickly approaching the end of the year, so let's see, we've got the newly renamed Straight Kenai coming up, or the W2RS Memorial AMSAT CW Activity Day, and that is to be held January the 1st, 2026. In March of 2022, the AMSAT community lost one of our pioneers when Ray Soifer, W2RS, became a silent key. In addition to his numerous contributions to AMSAT and the worldwide amateur satellite community, Ray was also the longtime organizer of AMSAT's CW Activity Day, previously known as AMSAT Straight Key Night. And it was held in conjunction with the ARRL's event on New Year's Day. In recognition of Ray's longtime service to AMSAT and his keen interest in CW operating via satellite, AMSAT's CW Activity Day is now known as the W2RS Memorial AMSAT CW Activity Day.
W5BSA Repeater.
Okay, the rules are simple. You operate CW through any amateur satellite between 0000 UTC and 2359 UTC on January the 1st, 2026. Straight keys and bugs are encouraged but not required. Logs are not required, but operators are encouraged to submit a report of their activity to the AMSAT BB. Photos and video clips of activity are also encouraged. Post them on X or other social media networks and tag @AMSAT or #AMSAT. And then you never know, your pictures may show up in the AMSAT journal. Remember to use the minimum power required for communication at constant carrier modes, including CW. It can disrupt transponder operation for other users. And we want to thank AMSAT for that information. Okay, this is Marty, WV5Y in the Houston AMSAT Net. Bob McGuire, N4HY, has announced the release of a new satellite tracking application entitled Visible Ephemeris. Visible Ephemeris is a modern spiritual successor to QuickTrack from 1986, re-engineered for the Raspberry Pi 5 and modern silicone. It is capable of propagating 13,000 plus satellites in real time with sub-second updates while maintaining less than 5% CPU utilization. Visible Ephemeris is a high-performance physics-based program using Kelso Volato SGP-4 to track satellites, all in the Celestrac TLE. It uses McGuire's implementation of Pedro Escobar AOS/LOS search, but rewritten for altitude and not eccentric anomaly. The code is designed for and intended for Raspberry Pi and displays graphics components using Web UI. features a hybrid decoupled architecture where the UI, orbital mechanics, and network services run on independent threads, ensuring the interface never freezes, even during heavy calculation loads. Visible Ephemeris has been released under the MIT license, and further details can be found at github.com/n4hy/visibleephemeriscpp.git. And, of course, thanks to Bruce, KK5U. The link is over there at amsatnet.com. And we want to thank Bob McGuire, N4HY, for that information.
DL-123.
Okay, this is Marty, WV5Y on the East AmSatNet. Now we're right at quarter past the hour here, just a little past, so we're going to take a quick standby and take a look around and see who we've had checking into the net. Okay, let's see, we got Charlie, K5ENG, over there in West Houston, so we got him checked in, so glad he's still doing good over there. We've got Dale, WD0AKO, he's up there in Moorhead, Minnesota, and he does the backup archiving of the audio for the website, so we appreciate that, and we have had to use it here in the past. And thanks to Vern, W0RCR, out there in Wentzville, Missouri. You can hear our net on 1.860 megahertz, full carrier AM, as Vern likes to say, and that's at 5:30 p.m. and 9 p.m. Central Time on Saturdays. And then, of course, there's Kai, N6ZZO, and he's out there in McKinleyville, California, and he's one of our podcast listeners. He calls and checks in. So we appreciate that when he does that, like this week. And we just missed his call there, but we appreciate the happy holidays greeting he left us there on the machine. So same to you, Kai, and I hope you have a happy holiday over there in Northern California. Okay, from the Internet Relay Chat System, we've got Ken, AK0A, Clay, KG4OZW, and also happy holidays to Rachie. And then we've got KG4WIJ, Brian, NZ9T, Renee, and K8WX, Bob. And then on Echolink, see, we've got Steve, K5YFC. Good evening to Steve. Hello to Mitch, 80HJ. He's out there in Jackson, Minnesota. And, of course, thanks to Mitch, there's a Wednesday night AmSatNet that people can participate in. And that takes place on DMR, and that's on Wednesday nights at 9 p.m. Central Time. And that's over on the AmSat DMR talk group, 98006, or YSF Fusion, it's 11689. So, like I said, that's at 9 p.m. Central Time, and if you're going to be doing any roving or making any rare grids available there by satellite, then you might let those guys know, and they can put the word out. Okay, hello to Dave, and happy holidays up there in Howard Lake, Minnesota. That's WB7DRU. And he's been listening with us since we had a landline connection up there to Minnesota. So that's been many decades ago. So good evening to Dave. Hello to Bruce, KK5DO, up there in Roman Forest. And like I said, he is our webmaster. And he does the website for us over there at amsatnet.com. So if you'd like to check out any of the URLs to follow along that we announced, we've got links over there, so you can do that. If you'd like to get awards for making satellite contacts or get certificates, he's got information on that too, since he is, besides being an AMSAT ambassador, board of directors, he is also the awards guy. So you can find out about how to get awards there also at AMSAT.org, and you can find out information about the status of the satellites, if they're working or not, what frequencies their uplink and downlinks are on, and information about the upcoming symposium, and then there's even a store where you can buy new satellite antennas. So that's over at www.amsat.org. Okay, we also want to say good evening and happy holidays to NDOF, N6UTC. He's over there in Long Beach, California. And also to Damien, AG9P in Oconto, Wisconsin. And Damien has also been listening there with us for a long time. Okay, the spark of curiosity and ambition often starts in a university lab. A handful of students gather, sketch rough diagrams on whiteboards, debate orbital mechanics at midnight, and dream of seeing their own hardware flying above the Earth. And this is how university space clubs prepare for their first satellite project. For many of these aspiring engineers and scientists, involvement with the Student Satellite Club represents more than just coursework. It's their first real shot at participating in space exploration. These clubs across universities worldwide transform ideas into hardware and enthusiasm into the kind of rigorous planning it takes to actually launch. From idea to kickoff, forming the team and setting goals. At the outset, a group of students, often from different disciplines like mechanical engineering, computer science, electronics, or physics, comes together with a shared interest in building a satellite. For many, this marks the beginning of the university's satellite project rather than just a class exercise. And some teams even use a dedicated research assistant to streamline early planning and gather technical insights. The club defines its mission. Maybe it's Earth observation, environmental sensing, communications testing, or a technology demonstration. The first practical step is to assemble a core team, subsystem leads for avionics, communications, structure, power, payload, and operations. This division, common in professional aerospace teams, helps students learn early how complex spacecraft are divided into interdependent systems. Some clubs also look for faculty advisors or collaborators from industry to guide them through unfamiliar territory. Once the pieces are in place, the club sets goals and schedules. Will this be a CubeSat, a smaller pocket cube, or a microsatellite? What payload makes sense given the budget and skills available? How will ground station communications work? Early decisions help steer the entire project and establish realistic expectations about the scope, cost, and timeline. The importance of design, simulation, and prototyping. Design is where theory meets reality. Students work on 3D models of satellite structure, layout of solar panels, shielding, antennas, and internal boards. They simulate thermal, electrical, and mechanical stresses to ensure their satellite can survive launch vibrations and the harsh environment of space. Many clubs employ computer-aided design, or CAD tools, and simulation software to anticipate potential issues. And some of them probably play with that CubeSat sim, too. Prototyping follows design. Groups build mock-ups or engineering models, sometimes out of inexpensive materials, to test fits, deployment, and mechanics, and subsystem integration. This hands-on phase reveals assembly challenges that might not show up on the screen. It also builds critical skills like soldering, wiring, 3D printing parts, basic clean room assembly practices, and rigorous testing.
BL-123.
A student group rarely operates in isolation. Universities might provide lab space, clean rooms, testing facilities, and occasional small budgets, but often additional external support is crucial. Clubs frequently reach out to faculty in engineering, physics, or computer science departments for mentorship. Some clubs also form partnerships with research institutions. Local aerospace companies, amateur radio communities, or national space agencies to gain access to more advanced equipment. One often overlooked but essential component is the ground segment. Successful satellite needs to reliably communicate with the Earth, upload commands, receive telemetry, downlink data. For many student teams, building or adapting a ground station is part of the learning curve. On the operations side, the team writes procedures and schedules. When to turn on instruments, how to run health checks, how to handle contingencies like partial failures or unexpected behavior in orbit. This mission operations mindset trains students in the discipline of space mission management. This is Marty WV5Y in the Houston AmSatNet. As the launch nears, the club shifts into full production mode. All subsystems must be assembled, tested, and integrated. Thermal vacuum tests, vibration tests, and electromagnetic interference tests help ensure the satellite will survive the rigors of launch and space. Students often run repeated functional tests. They do power cycling, communication tests, antenna deployment, battery charging, and simulating real in-orbit operations. At the same time, they must deal with paperwork, launch licensing, radio frequency licensing, compliance with local international space regulations, and environmental reviews. Some universities facilitate this, but others require the student club to navigate the regulatory process itself, a valuable learning experience in project management. Once everything checks out, the team must coordinate with the launch provider, reserve a rideshare slot, or secure a deployment contract, define orbit parameters, and prepare payload manifest. Okay, then if they're lucky, they get to the first launch, and what comes next? Reaching orbit is a major milestone, but for student-built satellites, it's only the beginning. First missions are typically demonstration or technology testing. Once the satellite is in orbit, the ground station begins routine operations, receiving telemetry, validating system health, operating payloads, and collecting data. Why do these clubs matter? Beyond the immediate technical achievement, they cultivate a culture of innovation, hands-on learning, and collaboration, but lower the barrier to entry into space for students who might never have had the opportunity otherwise. Many graduates of student satellite clubs go on to careers in aerospace, research, or related industries, carrying with them practical skills in design, systems engineering, hardware testing, and project management. As university clubs gain experience and build reputations, they do more than just offer small satellite development for students. They also help governments and space agencies recognize the value of small satellites, low-cost experimentation, rapid iteration, educational outreach, and workforce development. We want to thank Orbital Today for that information, and you can read the full article over at orbitaltoday.com/2025/12/19/how-university-space-clubs-prepare-for-their-first-satellite-project. Okay, and of course, Bruce has those URLs at amsatnet.com. If you'd like to get your AMSAT remove before flight key tag, they are still available, and they are the real thing. They're lovely red with white embroidered lettering that say remove before flight on one side, and they have AMSAT name and logo on the other side. And your $20 donation does go to help fly a Fox Plus satellite. It does include the first class postage back to you, but it is only for those folks in U.S. addresses only. Sorry. You can order today at www.amsat.org/product/amsat-remove-before-flight-keychain. And it's getting down to the end of the nitty-gritty, your last chance to join the 2025 AMSAT President's Club. You can help celebrate the 40th anniversary of amateur radio on human spaceflight and help support the Golf and Fox Plus projects. You can join the AMSAT President's Club today by just going over to www.amsat.org/join-v-amsat-presidents-club. All right. This is Marty, WV5Y on the Houston AMSAT Net. We're just a couple of minutes here past the bottom of the hour. So let's take a quick standby, see if we have any more local check-ins or any other check-ins at all. Any other check-ins to the pre-Christmas Houston AMSAT Net? Come now. Okay, it looks like we do have an admission. It now says instead of coming in 2025, it says coming in 2026. The SDR Gen 2, the versatile GNU radio-based transverter, the new one that they're going to come up with, it's going to fly on the Fox Plus and the Golf. It's going to have 144 megahertz to 6 gigahertz continuous coverage, direct VHF, UHF, 900 megahertz LS and C-band operations. Also, a conversion for 5 and 10 gigahertz. Okay, it's built to fly on Fox Plus and the Golf missions. We'll cover all modes like CW, single sideband, FT8, narrowband FM, single side, SSTV, ATV, all kinds of modes, and minimum downlink, data rate of 1 megaslice per second, or 1 megascan per second. And it's built to fly on a Fox Plus or the Golf missions. Once again, And it's the AMSAT engineers keeping amateur radio in space, and the ASCENT, the Advanced Satellite Communication and Exploration of New Technology. Okay, let's see, we do have, no, we do not have this week any changes to the AMSAT TLE distributions, but two line elements, or TLEs, often referred to as Keplerian elements, or KEPs in the amateur community, are the inputs to the SGP-4 standard mathematical model of spacecraft orbits used by most amateur tracking programs. Weekly updates are completely adequate for most amateur satellites. TLE bulletin files are updated daily in the first hour of the UTC day. New bulletin files will be posted immediately after reliable elements become available for new amateur satellites. And you can find more information at www.amsat.org/Keplerian-elements-resources.
PL-123.
Okay, it says this week there are no changes to the AMSAT TLE distributions, but we want to thank Joe Fitzgerald, KM1P, AMSAT Orbital Elements Manager. And, of course, that's not to say there aren't any new satellites up there. There is a couple of new ones that are sending down some slow scan pictures that you can copy. That's like ArcticSat 1, RS-38S, and RS-74S. So you can get the new KEPs for those into your satellite tracking programs and see where those passes are coming. I think we actually had a really good one, or just a few minutes ago. So, copy some slow scan there coming out of some satellites. This is Marty, WV5Y in the Houston AMSAT Net. Hey, do you need some new satellite antennas? Well, you can purchase those good M2 LEO packs, and you can get them from the AMSAT store when you purchase through AMSAT. As well as you getting a discount, a portion of the proceeds goes towards keeping amateur radio in space. And the URL is at amsat.org/product-category/hardware. And, of course, the latest report we had a few weeks ago was that they had restocked the supply of those, so hopefully they still have some that are in stock. Okay, amateurs and others around the world may listen in on contacts to amateurs operating in schools and allowing students to interact with astronauts and cosmonauts and JAXA astronauts aboard the International Space Station. And the downlink frequency on which to listen is on 145.800 MHz worldwide. And no contacts are currently scheduled since the schools are not in session right at the moment for their holiday break. But many times the school may make a last minute to do a live stream. And so you can always go check and see if they are, and that's over at live.aris.org. As always, of course, if there's an EVA, a docking or an undocking, the Aris radios are turned off as part of the safety protocol, so if you're expecting to hear some activity when it comes over on a pass and you don't hear anything, oftentimes that's the reason. They had some activity going on and so the radios were off. But the crossband repeater continues to be active. It's on at 145.990 MHz up with a peel tone of 67. And then you listen on the downlink, that's on 437.800 MHz down. And of course, as you're listening, you gotta adjust for Doppler a little bit. So you kinda, you know, gotta tune a little high, and as it goes by, you tune a little low. So you end up spreading out about, you know, 10 kilohertz or so. But if any crew member is so inclined, just pick up the mic, raise the volume up, and they can talk on the crossband repeater from the International Space Station. So give a listen. You just never know. One of the astronauts might be talking, and you might be the one that talks to him. Okay, they say note, all times are approximate. It's recommended you do your own orbital prediction. We'll start listening about 10 minutes before the listed time. Those, you know, they don't know exactly where you're at. So, the latest information on the operation mode for the ISS can be found over at www.ars.org/current-status-of-iss-stations.html. And the latest list of frequencies in use is over at www.ars.org/contact-v-iss.html. And we want to thank Charlie Safana, HA9N, one of the ARIS operation team mentors, for that information. Okay, this is Marty, WV5Y in the Houston AmSat Net. Well, I hope everybody's looking forward to getting that, you know, special little radio there underneath their tree or antenna or whatever there, so they can make some good satellite contacts. And then once you do, you like to go out and sit in your car somewhere and make some satellite contacts. Well, you might want to fly the colors for your own group expedition and have an AmSat car flag. Okay, AmSat car flags can be acquired from our Zazzle store. And when you do, 25% of the purchase price of each product you might get there goes towards keeping amateur radio in space. And that's over at www.zazzle.com/store/AmSat_gear. Okay, we want to say hello to Clay over there on the Internet Relay chat system. We got a yo, Marty, and Merry Christmas, and a hello from Rachie. So we want to wish all that stuff back to you guys. AmSat ambassadors provide presentations, demonstrate communicating through amateur satellites, and they host information tables at club meetings, hamfests, conventions, maker fairs, and other events. And AmSat Ambassador Clint Bradford, K6LCS, says, "Think a 75-minute presentation on working the easy satellites would be appropriate for your club or event? Let him know by emailing him." Okay, that's K6LCSClint@gmail.com, or you can give Clint a call, and that's at 909-999-SATS, or 7287. And Clint has never given the exact same show twice. Each of his 150-plus presentations so far has been customized and tailored to his audiences. Okay, well, since there's only a week or so to go, well, there are no scheduled events currently, but if you're interested in becoming an AmSat ambassador and you'd like to provide presentations and demonstrate communicating to amateur satellites at club meetings or hamfests or convention fairs or maker fairs, stuff like that, well, you can find more information over at www.amsat.org/ambassador. And, of course, Bo Lowry, W4FCL, is the director of the AMSAT Ambassador Program, and we want to say thanks to him. This is Marty, WV5Y, in the Houston AMSAT Net. AMSAT Oscar 123's FM transponder has been back in operation periodically over the past week. The uplink for the FM transponder is on 145.850 MHz, and it has a CTCSS tone of 67 Hz. And the downlink is on 435.400 MHz. And they want to say thanks to contributors to the AMSAT status page. So yeah, when you give a reply and let them know if you heard things or not, well, that makes the data on the status page more accurate.
DL-123.
The 90th AMSAT Rover Award has been issued to HJ1M. For more information on AMSAT Awards, you can visit www.amsat.org/awards-2. And we want to say thanks to Bruce Page, KK5DO, the AMSAT Director of Contests and Awards. On December 18, 2025, President Trump signed an executive order entitled Ensuring American Space Superiority. In this order, the president announced the policy of the U.S. government is to return Americans to the moon by 2028 through the Artemis program and to establish the initial elements of a permanent lunar outpost by 2030 to ensure a sustained American presence in space and enable the next steps in Mars exploration. And on December the 17th, 2025, the U.S. Senate confirmed the nomination of Jared Isaacman to be the administrator of NASA by a vote of 67-30. Isaacman took office as the NASA administrator the following day. Okay, this is Marty, WV5Y, in the Houston AMSAT Net. All right, looks like we got a few minutes here left, so while we're on that very last topic there, we got a little bit. This is from Space Daily at Space.Wire, Washington, from December the 19th. U.S. President Donald Trump on Thursday confirmed he wants to send astronauts back to the moon as soon as possible, putting eventual Mars missions on the back burner. Okay, as we just reported in an executive order on his space policy, Trump said he wanted to get Americans to the moon by 2028 under NASA's Artemis program launched during his first White House term. Such a lunar landing would assert American leadership in space, lay the foundations for lunar economic development, prepare for the journey to Mars, and inspire the next generation of American explorers, the order says. It also says that the U.S. Space Agency, NASA, hopes to set up initial elements of a permanent lunar outpost by 2030 and confirms plans to deploy nuclear reactors on the moon and in orbit. Americans are currently scheduled to return to the moon's surface in mid-2027 on the Artemis III mission, but the timeline has been repeatedly pushed back. And industry experts say it is likely will be delayed again because the lunar lander in development at Elon Musk's SpaceX is not yet ready. And I know they're working on those spacesuits too, so Trump's executive order puts increased pressure on both NASA and the private space sector to reach the administration's objectives. The United States is keen to bypass China, which also intends to send a crew to the moon by 2030 and set up a base there. Putting the priority on a lunar mission represents a policy shift from what Trump had said earlier this year. When he returned to the White House in January, the Republican said he wanted to put the American flag on Mars before the end of his four-year term without mentioning any such plans for the moon. That announcement has sown doubt on the administration's priorities in space and propelled fears that NASA was going to skip over the moon altogether. But now, even though Washington has long said it wants to be the first nation to send humans to Mars, that reality seems farther away. The row in June between Trump and Musk, who is passionate about Mars exploration, along with other pressing geopolitical concerns, may have shifted Trump's ambitions. Okay, this is Marty, WV5Y in the Houston AmSatNet. Jared Isaacman, U.S. President Donald Trump's two-time appointee to lead NASA, said it was his goal that the United States beat rival China in the space race to return humans to the moon during a Senate confirmation hearing on Wednesday. And that also comes from Space Daily and Space.wire. This is from December the 3rd. Isaacman, 42, a billionaire entrepreneur and private astronaut who is a close associate of Elon Musk, appeared during a rare second confirmation hearing that followed Trump's renomination of him in November for the top post at the U.S. Space Agency. Isaacman told senators that, if confirmed for the job, he would ensure the success of the Artemis Lunar Exploration Program started in 2017 during Trump's first administration. America will return to the moon before our great rival, and we will establish an enduring presence to understand and realize the scientific, economic, and national security value on the lunar surface, Isaacman said. His nomination, first announced after Trump won the 2024 election, then withdrawn in April 2025 and again reissued last month, reflects the president's on-again, off-again relationship with Musk, the world's richest man and founder of SpaceX, among other ventures. I have to say for a moment, this feels a bit like Groundhog Day. Republican Senator Ted Cruz, chairman of the Senate Committee on Commerce, Science, and Transportation, said as he opened the hearing. Trump's decision to withdraw Isaacman's first nomination took place as the president feuded in the spring with Musk, who had headed Trump's so-called Department of Government Efficiency. But Trump and Musk appear to have since reconciled, and now there's a second space race. been 53 years since humans last landed on the surface of the moon. In a Cold War space race with the Soviet Union, the U.S. last completed that feat with its Apollo 17 mission in December 1972. During his first confirmation hearing in April, Eisenman stated he wanted to prioritize sending astronauts to Mars, but on Wednesday, he spoke more cautiously about Mars and more strongly emphasized the goal of returning a manned U.S. mission to the moon as soon as possible. NASA's Artemis program to return to the moon, however, has faced numerous delays in recent years. Experts warned in September that the lunar lander developed by SpaceX might not be ready in time. Such a complication would put the United States in risk of being overtaken by China, which also aims to reach the moon by 2030, Trump's appointee indicated at Wednesday's hearing. I think it's imperative that we do so, and failing to do so calls into question American exceptionalism beyond just our expertise in the high ground of space, Eisenman said. While the Trump administration was open several months ago to revisiting the Artemis program in favor of Mars, the Artemis program in favor of Mars, his prospect now seems to be fading. Since the rift between the U.S. president and billionaire Elon Musk, who is obsessed with the red planet, U.S. authorities have been emphasizing their determination to outpace Beijing in what they call the second space race.
BL-123.
Eisenman is planning to ensure that SpaceX delivers the lunar lander on time. Eisenman made his fortune in online payments as the founder and CEO of Shift 4. He has flown two private space missions aboard SpaceX rockets, and has been a key customer and advocate for the company's space exploration goals. Asked about a potential conflict of interest with Musk, with whom he is reportedly very close, Eisenman assured that he maintains only professional relations with them. Senators, I'm not here for personal gain to favor or enrich contractors, Eisenman said.
This is the W5BSA repeater.
Okay, well, I hope everybody has their shopping done, all ready for the holidays, get to go to church or whatever it is you prefer to do here, like tomorrow, or that's what I like to do, but I know that everybody's probably going to have a good holiday out there, so stay safe, and everybody enjoy this nice weather, this seasonal 83-degree weather we're having down here in Houston. But I want to remind folks, you can join AMSAT today, still this year, and that's by going to launch.amsat.org. And in addition to regular membership, AMSAT offers membership to societies, which is a recognized group, club, or organization. Students are eligible for free membership up to the age of 25. And memberships are available for annual and lifetime terms. You can contact info@amsat.org for additional membership information. 73, and remember to help keep amateur radio in space. And that's from this week's ANS editor, Paul Stotzer, N8HM. And that's N8HM@AWRL.net. Okay, we want to say stay safe if you're traveling anywhere, especially, and be sure and don't forget about that balloon launch there tomorrow down by Wharton, and be sure and have a happy holiday. Merry Christmas. So from Andy, W5ACM, and Bruce, KK5DO, up there in North Houston, and myself, Marty, WV5Y in Northwest Houston, we say 7-3 for this week. Still one more week to go this year, and the Houston AmSat Net, the 73.